Mr. Bodie?
Here.
Mrs. Brannon?
Here.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Here.
Mr. Truitt?
Here.
Ms. Wasma?
Here.
Does everybody stand for the pledge and a moment of silence?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Culp's going to show the board a couple videos that feature some brand new things. Take your time, Andy, we're fine. But we could go ahead and approve the minutes from the regular board meeting on November 14th. And I apologize, is everybody in attendance on the November 20th special meeting? Okay, so we'll do this separately. If I could have a motion to approve the regular meeting on November 14th. All in favor?
Aye.
It's passed. Can I have a motion for the special meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Then you second.
Yeah, I'm writing it down too.
I take the notes for it. Any questions about those? All in favor? See if I'm saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We will have, just wait a moment while he gets set up. This will be a brief couple videos, and then we'll do hearing of the public, and then we mark.
Hey, Jesse, did you guys approve the minutes?
Yeah, so on the regular meeting,
thank you,
Melissa motion, Debbie second.
Okay.
Ash unanimous. Special meeting, Eric motion, Debbie second.
Okay.
Right.
Molly abstained. She was not present.
Do you want me to go ahead with the financial reports? Or do you want to wait for it?
Perry.
All right, Andy, do you want to set up what you're showing us?
Yes, I do. So, WOSU, which probably all of you have heard of, I'm guessing, has done a best practice video series, and they could choose any district in Franklin County, really Ohio, to do this. And I'm going to say 30% of their content was Grandview focused. And so there are five core topics around which they focus. And this one is voice and choice. And then under each of the five headings, they have three specific grade levels and authentic examples of what it looks like, in which our teachers are also spotlighted. And suffice it to say, as objective as I can be, our teachers do an incredible job. So this is something that I think we can be really proud of, and I just wanted to take a moment to share this with the board. I'm just going to show you two videos. I forwarded all of you the link by way of email today, so you can do a deep dive and look through them at your leisure. Additionally, we're going to be posting a video a week on our webpage for the community to see as well. But these are just really well done, and I wanted to take a quick opportunity to show them to you because I'm really proud of them and of it, and it says a lot about our district and the work that we've been doing for the last many years. So Perry, I don't think I'll have any problems, but if I do,
education and learning sometimes happens to children. We're still working our way out of the factory model of education and the Eisenhower model of PE and health.
Students learn best when they are engaged. Students are engaged most when they have voice and choice, what it is that they're learning about. And the more passionate that they are about what it is that they're learning and the outcomes, the more choice they have, the more passionate they'll be.
If we give them their own voice, their own choice, and what is happening in their learning is more meaningful, more effective for them, there's more buy-in.
Education and learning sometimes happens to children. We're still working our way out of the factory model of education and the Eisenhower model of PE and health. For our students to exercise their voice and their choice and their autonomy in the classroom from the day they enter our classrooms is absolutely critical. The learning cannot happen to them. It has to be with them, beside them, and creating opportunities for them to grow their own ideas, their own thought processes. And I think for too long, we've allowed students to live in what I consider that dormant place where they have a lot of receptive information, but we don't ask them to think about that critically and then to produce and do around something they're excited about. So for us, I feel like as a district, that is where we are spending a lot of our time, both physically and cognitively, is to give students that opportunity to think very deeply about what they're interested in and then use those choices to apply their learning.
Voice and choice is important because students are able to make a selection from any tool that's available to show evidence of their learning. We want them to be able to choose what tools are appropriate for them, and technology obviously is one of those tools that we think is invaluable.
Seeing how the kids react to voice and choice is the magical part about my job, because I've been able to walk into a classroom and you see nothing but smiles. Kids come running up to me and they show me what they're learning, how they're learning, what they're posting, what they're writing, and it's their expression and how they own it is probably the best thing that I love to see, is the proud moment of their success in education.
In order to know your students, you need to have data about them. Data does not have to come only from state tests or standardized tests. Data can come in a lot of ways in the classroom. The best way to capture student data is formative assessment. You can use technology or not to capture that data, but once you have the data about your students, what they know and what they don't know, where their next appropriate instructional level is, that's when you can really start to make gains with student achievement. Students need to know where they stand as well in the classroom when it comes to data. So
So if you have standards-based instruction, and the students know what they're learning and what they're supposed to be learning, they know the steps along that learning path, they can make decisions about their own learning. If students know where they are on their learning path, they are more likely to be able to reach that next level because they see what they're learning for and they see where they're learning is needed. One of the biggest challenges with data-driven decision-making in schools is understanding what data is. Data is more than just state test scores, much more than that. Data is something you can collect on a daily basis. It does not have to be something that's graded. It does not have to come from a formal assessment. Data is knowing what your students know and what they need to know next. Data decision making, the most important thing is the formative instructional practices that teachers engage in on a daily basis. And it's those formative instructional practices that generate data that drive instruction to the individual learner. And that is how we differentiate our instruction for our kids. So for me, the most important data that we collect is that formative measure of a student or an aggregate student body's learning. The other really important question around data is the so what question. You know, I think many times we are data rich, but it's the so what. So what do we do with the data and how is it driving our instruction to maximize and personalize every student's learning?
In order to talk about data, you have to talk about the elephant in the room, and that word is data. Data is a very polarizing concept for teachers and sometimes for students and parents. So for us, we look at data as the beginning of a conversation and a story. And that data is always attached to a child and a student and their experiences. So whether we're talking about informal data that we're gathering through observation and learning process, or sets of data where you're looking at student achievement and growth, the most important feature is that you're bringing it back to a conversation around students, their learning and their experiences.
I could show you about five more because this is really rich and it's really exciting, and so I wanted to just show you two videos. I did forward you the link, and so you'll have an opportunity to review all of them. They're really rich. I will just give one plug. Dan Callahan, I believe he teaches
seventh grade.
Thank you. He has a video in here. And it is, I mean, it gives me goosebumps, quite frankly. I mean, obviously I know Dan, but I haven't had the pleasure of really getting in his classroom and observing his teach on a weekly, daily basis. That video that he does is a case study on best practices. It is outstanding. In fact, I would submit to you that I've watched all of the videos, and I think that video is the best of all of them. I mean, he just does an unbelievable job of really articulating succinctly best practices and what it looks like, feels like for students in his class. So,
Andy, I know you sent us a link. Where can folks, where is
so
that?
So what we're going to do, Jesse, is we're going to post a video a week on our webpage.
Okay.
For the entire community. But if any of you would like to have the whole, it's WOSU. If you go to WOSU and you search their Learning Hub.
So it's on there.
It's all on there.
Great.
And they're doing it as a public service to help all teachers throughout the state think about what does best practice look like. And they've done an unbelievable job of, in my judgment, of really capturing best practices in really simplistic, user-friendly ways. Not just from a big picture standpoint. The videos I showed you were the big picture standpoint. Under each of those, they have a third grade teacher, a seventh grade teacher, and a high school teacher spotlighting what each of those themes looks like in the classroom, and they're really well done and really rich.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to show those. All right. Well, thank you for your
dedication. The Dan Callahan one's under voice and choice.
Okay.
It was the middle one.
We'll jump to recognition and presentation. Thank you, Andy, while you pack up. We'll jump to recognition of guests and hearing of the public. If anybody would like to address the board, they may so at this time. A couple reminders, please limit comments to 5 minutes. Don't mention staff names or student names. All statements should be directed to the board. We wouldn't answer questions at this time. We just hear statements, but certainly we do willing to meet with people individually if there's more conversation. So the way we do this is people can speak now or they can speak directly before an action item on the agenda. So to any public comment at this time. So if you want to speak before an action item, make sure, raise your hand or something so that I see you. That will move to Treasurer's report.
Okay, so you should each have a copy of our financial reports as of November 30th. So the first page you can see is our cash reconciliation as of November 30th. You can see our money market account balances at the top. One thing that I did want to share with our move to First Merchants Bank, a new program that we are just starting, actually yesterday we started this, a program called Positive Pay. And what it does, when we issue any checks, we send a report to the bank of the checks that we have issued, and the only checks then that they will ever clear through our account is what we have uploaded to them and confirmed that we have issued. So it really, really cuts down the chance of any kind of electronic fraud or hacking into our accounts. So doing that not only with our general checking account, but with our payroll account as well. So I'm really excited about that. It's a very, very small fee. I think $60 a month to have that added level of security within our accounts. And because of our balance, we probably will never pay a penny for it, honestly. So anyway, I'm really excited about that. We did kind of a training, Jenny and I did this morning, and sent test files, uploaded the initial reports that we needed, and everything went through. So anyway, that's a great feature that they offer, and I thought it only made sense to take advantage of that. So moving on then to our general fund history report, fiscal year 2019, you can see to the far right, nothing really unusual or unexpected at this point. You can see our taxes are just about where we have been the last couple years. The property tax allocation, if you remember last year, we were a little low on that first half, and that's something that comes in two halves with the semi-annual property tax settlements. So we were a little bit low there last year. We're closer to where I would have expected us to be this year. So that's why it looks like an increase overall after the second half of our fiscal year settlement. Those numbers will be very close to equal. Looking down at expenditures, the one thing that I pointed out before, the insurance benefits, while we had no premium increase this year, we did have several additional staff members sign up for insurance. And actually, within the last couple of days, we had another staff member whose spouse lost a job, was in signing up for insurance. So that number is always going to fluctuate a little bit just based on enrollment, regardless of the premium freeze that we had this year. So overall, the cash balance for our general fund as of November 30th was $8,906,924. So moving on to the budget to actual, again, same data, general fund actual, just with the comparison to our current five-year forecast. So what does that actual financial information look like compared to what we projected? So revenues, again, the property taxes, the property tax allocation, the Grandview Yard, those three revenue sources are semi-annual payments. The state funding, the other revenue, the restricted state grants are a little closer tied to where we are in the year. So you can see 41.7% through the year, and you can see how those revenue numbers compare. So those are where we expect them to be at this point. Our total expenditures, 41.4%, so we're 0.3%. Less than what we had projected as at this point in the year. So again, we are exactly where we would expect to be. Again, you can see the general fund cash balance at the bottom. The next two pages are that same five-year forecast budget to actual comparison in the bar graph format. And then our PI fund, our Permanent Improvement Levy Fund, a budget to actual comparison. along with a financial detail. So the revenue we've received this year and everything that we have spent out of that PI fund on the final page. So that's all I have.
I have a motion to approve the 2018 financial reports and accept the payment of the November 2018 bills, please.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or discussion from the board? Beth, please call and roll.
Mr. Bodie?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Aye.
Committee reports. I do not believe we've had a finance committee since last board meeting. Policy?
Policy. We have a long list of policies that we did a first reading on in November. I know we went through everything at that meeting, including the chart that we created, and now it's now being highlighted and color-coded as to what's new. That was from the August policy development quarterly. A new one came out in November, but it only has, I think, five new ones, and I don't think there are anything but required Google updates. And so we should have a very small slate of on the next one, and a very small meeting compared to the lengthy one we had for this this list of policies. But beyond that, I don't have anything else to update.
I believe teaching, learning, communications, and wellness is not that capacity. Right. I mean, we added this board, we just put that in context. So, but the foundation has.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it's they're just they're having more shorter meetings instead of just quarterly long meetings. But they're just progressing on the gala invites go out January 1st. They're finishing up paying out all the grants for this year, and they've updated their website that looks really nice. They have people check it out. They've got like all the grants that they granted with information about each. And
Two other just updates specific to the foundation. One, Gary Heidinger, after 6 years of service, his last board meeting was Monday. And Debbie, I can't remember who his replacement is. Do you remember his name or Melissa?
James Hunt.
James Hunt, thank you. So James Hunt will be billing starting in January.
Right.
And then the second thing that they also approved, which is new, is staff members historically have paid full freight for themselves and a spouse when attending the gala. And they voted in that if they buy full freight one ticket, the second ticket is half off for staff members. Up to, and I do think they capped it. I don't remember what the cap was. Like, do you, Debbie?
Well,
like 25 maybe? In other words, they would sell 25.
Tickets.
Yeah, and so if there was interest past 25, they did cap it, I think was the framework. And if I don't have it exactly correct, I apologize, but I'm very close. Does that sound accurate to you?
I don't remember.
I read it was the other way around. Staff had a discount. Spouse was full.
Well.
Did they already publish it? Are we staff? No, we're not.
OSBA legislative?
There is a couple things coming around. I don't think this affects us too much in Grandview, which is a fantastic problem not to have. House Bill 491, which extended the graduation requirements, alternate pathways to graduation, has been approved through the House and the Senate, just waiting for Governor Kasich's signature, and that should be through 2020. Not too bad for... No, it
several of us attended the city, Grandview Heights City Council meeting, and it was a very big agenda and included the first read of all the legislation for the Grandview Yard, the South of Goodale portion, and the redo of the school compensation agreement. So the way that process will unfold is first reading's done, it was assigned to the Economic Development Committee. The Economic Development Committee will meet on the legislation, and then part of it will go to the Planning Commission, which is scheduled for December 19th at 7 p.m. And then the City Council is not meeting as an entire body, legislative body, again until Monday, January 7th, which I assume will be the second reading, and then likely final vote at the mid-month, which would be January 21st. All those meetings are, I assume, will keep the same framework, which are also 7 p.m. And I don't have the Economic Development meeting scheduled yet, but I will attend that, assuming I can, with work obligations.
You said the 17th or the 19th?
I'm sorry. The December 19th is Planning Commission, and then in January, Monday, January 7th, and then Monday, January 21st, I assume will be the next two meetings. That's always the framework as it's currently set up, just procedure-wise and meeting schedule-wise. And then that was December 3rd. On December 5th, Andy and I attended a small meeting. Smaller meeting. It's a shoot. Another committee that has grown out of the Growing on Tradition Steering Committee, which I sit on as school liaison, and they've started a new group of community members to do a plan for community civic spaces and places. That's also being led by NBBJ, and as part of that, they're looking at all of the city buildings, and as I understand it, the plan is eventually all those buildings would be demoed and rebuilt. They're looking at police, fire, the administrative portion of the city, so that would be the mayor's office and all the permanent staff, a new community center, then obviously the new service building. The city purchased land and is building a new service building over on McKinley on the other side of 670. That's happened. They purchased the land maybe 18 months ago, and they've already gone through the whole design process, and I think they've gotten close to hiring who's going to be the contractor for that. But part of this is a group of community members. It's pretty heavy on Planning Commission members, Board of Zoning Appeals, and I don't know how the city's determined who is on that committee, but I sit on that, and Andy was invited as we talk about this is a community space, there's some community places here, what could that look like as a framework for the future? And again, that's been being guided by NBBJ. That was on Wednesday night, and then on Friday, I attended the Economic Development 411 conference with Greta Kearns and Pat Bowman of the city, and it's a huge, it's about a six-hour conference where they talk about economic development and the state of affairs, I guess, in Columbus and progress toward goals. There's about 750 developers, elected officials, and economic development professionals in attendance. There were two keynotes. From Governor-elect DeWine, and then Les Wexner did a fireside chat with Alex Fisher, and it was fascinating. But it was really fascinating. They did it different this year, where the breakouts used to be educational sessions where you go and you pick which track you wanted to be on, and this time they assigned people based on, I think they tried to get probably representation in different rooms, and they asked for feedback about things you're seeing in our community and what can Columbus do better, and you know, here are challenges we face. Let's try to get ahead of them, like traffic issues, because our growth is so insane right now in Columbus, and trying the housing crisis. There's just not enough. There's not enough housing being put up for the population growth. Just a lot of statistics. I have a lot of materials I brought back. It's a fascinating conference. And I don't have any electronic documents right now, but I'll see. A lot of it's very fascinating. I'll pass what I have around. I'm sorry, there are a couple more. Marble Cliff, they're still continuing the talks on what Frank Packard, the mansion that's over on 5th, what's going to happen with that redevelopment in Marble Cliff. And then also on the City Council agenda, December 3rd, was the first reading of legislation having to do with the Grandview Crossing, which is the development of at Grandview Ave and Riverside Drive, the brownfield. That's the one where the majority of the parcel is actually in Columbus, and Columbus City Council has already approved the incentives for that, and they're working on the Grandview part of it. And so I assume that we may see Wagon Runner at our next school board meeting, and they may be on this Planning Commission agenda too on December 19th.
So I think importantly, I just wanted to highlight all of the project-based learning that is occurring, and not just project-based learning, but service learning opportunities. I'm not going to read them, but there's a myriad of examples across the district, K-12, of really authentic examples of our students paying it forward and demonstrating service above self. I also want to thank our community and our board for the professional development time that we had with staff. It was another successful professional development day. And I'd like to personally thank Dr. Lesher for orchestrating that, as well as sending out a follow-up email outlining the outcomes of that day. It's always a really rich and wonderful experience for our students. So that's a short, sweet superintendent update.
Thank you. And as you remember, because we added this meeting, because of such a busy time of the recap, we did not ask for a building department that first to be submitted. So that was by design. We have, as Melissa mentioned, a lot of board policies. We went through the first reading of these at our last meeting. Could I have a motion for board policy procedure A1A through MN?
So moved. Second.
Any discussions or questions? We've had these in front of us a while. Please call the roll.
Mr. Bode?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Under business and finance, I know that Andy does want to make an introduction here. Why don't you go ahead and do that initially, and then we'll ask for a motion.
So we, as you might imagine, as a result of November 6th successful passage of the levy, have engaged in an RFQ and an RFP to hire a construction manager at risk, and we realized six applicants. We narrowed that six based on their submitted RFQ and RFP to three, and one of the three had to drop out because on November 7th they were offered three different school district jobs. So we interviewed two, and after that process we are beyond excited to welcome Elford Construction and Cornica Coasing, who's going to be engaged in a joint project. And with us tonight is our owner's rep, who works for Grandview Heights Schools, is 38 years in construction.
Actually
40.
You didn't start till he was 40.
Okay. So Doug, do you want to say a few words also about our process in Elford Cornica Coasing, and then introduce the president of Elford, Mike Fitzpatrick?
So again, I'm Doug Addis with Concord Addis. We're the owner's rep for the project. And as Andy said, it was a very thorough selection process. And we definitely landed on the right firm with the Elford Corner team. And very excited for the school district. I mean, the right decision was made. And both excellent firms, and they've done projects together before. Seven or eight, Mike, I think. Major jobs they did in convention center renovation together as Elford Corner and Elford being lead, and they do great work. And like I said, I'm very excited for the school district. It's going to be really good. So with that,
you know, the only other thing I would add is not that this was a deciding factor, but both Corner and Elford are local.
They are
Columbus based for decades, generations. So. Share that as well.
Very true. Yeah. And Mike Fitzpatrick is here with Elford Construction.
Yeah, welcome, Mike. You want to say a few words?
Thank you. We're thrilled to be on the team. We're congratulations to passing the levy and all the hard work you did to do it. And we can't wait to get started and build a great school together with an incredible community that's really excited about what the future is in store.
Thank you.
Did you want to talk about the architect?
Let's get through this one.
Okay.
So if we could, if I could have a motion on business and finance 1 through 6, which includes the Elford component.
So moved.
Second.
One point of clarification, and I believe the whole board knows that, what we're approving tonight is the approval to authorize negotiation and agreement for service with Elford. At our last board meeting, we did that with Moody, Nolan, Perkins, Will. So both those are being negotiated. At a certain point, there may need to be one, possibly two special board meetings once those negotiations are done to actually approve those contracts. So I just want to be clear, this is exactly what we did with the architect firm last time. This is just getting the ball rolling on the negotiation of those contracts. Any other questions or discussions on any of the businesses finance items?
I do. On the number four, which is the Umbaugh & Associates, just mm-hmm. talk through the reason for this contract and going through this whole, what has been a very extended process with the yard negotiations and the broader discussions of the last couple of years on the projections that we roll into our five-year forecast. It has gotten so complicated that the city wants to step out of being involved in projections at all, and we don't have Beth on our own. It's not part of her job description to generate projections for a development, and we really need some outside expertise. Umbaugh has been working very closely with me and Beth and Eric on the negotiation piece, and so they're very familiar with the yard, and so that is something that we need to continue to make sure that we are keeping up with what's going on, and we'll be able to do that. I think the city's not cutting off discussions on the topic, they're just not going to generate ones, because there's been some issues with mistakes that are found. It's so complicated with exemptions when they roll off, and if you get off in one part of that, everything carried forward is off, and they just want to step back. They don't want fingers, finger pointing or anything like that in the future as it continues to get more complicated. And so that's the need for the additional contract to help with those projections.
And part of the importance, too, not only do we rely on those projections to use in our five-year forecast, the operating portion, but with the ongoing negotiations that we have had with the city and with NRI to modify that school compensation agreement and to use the additional proceeds, that this board approved a resolution to earmark additional proceeds to reduce bond millage on the bond levy that just passed, it's critical that we have a good handle and know how much revenue that we're going to get from Grandview Yard under this new agreement. There's so much of our bond millage model that relies on assumptions of when properties come on the tax roll at Grandview Yard. If that changes by a year or 2 years, that has an impact on the revenue. And when we start realizing revenue as that development continues to evolve. So it's really, really critical now more than ever that we have accurate projections for for the Grandview Yard development. So as Melissa mentioned, Umbaugh has been working with us as a municipal advisor in conjunction with the bond issue and bond millage modeling, and has been working with all this Grandview Yard information, and they do this kind of work, so I think it makes sense to have them update these, get good starting numbers, and then each year they will look at development, what has come on the tax roll, what hasn't, if something's been delayed, and make those updates each year to keep those numbers accurate. And, as we've talked about before, we want to have a process where, every year we are looking closely at what did come in, how much of that, offsets bond millage, what that does to our bond millage rate and those procedures, and having that as an open, transparent process that we talk about through at a board meeting, that certification process and all that. So it's really important at this stage that we have a good handle on those numbers. So that's what this contract will do.
At least the best handle it's possible to get.
Yep.
Projections on a development.
Right.
Any questions or discussion? Beth, please call the roll.
Okay, Mr. Bodie?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Personnel, if we can have a motion for C1 through 5 and volunteers B1.
So moved.
Andy, you want to make a couple comments?
So our clinic aide, Corinne Diamond, found another job, and it's a full-time position, and so she's leaving us. She did a great job. That position has been posted. We actually interviewed for it. We've offered a job to a candidate, and they haven't accepted it yet, and we're still negotiating that. So we have a lead candidate, and we're kind of waiting to hear back from them. So that's where we are on that process.
Other questions or discussions from the board? Beth, call the roll.
Mr. Bodie?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Aye.
All right. Other, as a reminder, we will be required to do our January meeting by January 15th. And that's the organizational meeting where we have a large amount of stuff that we approve annually. I'm kind of jumping to two here. So, including the, at that meeting as well, will be the election of the officers for the year. I believe it sounds like January 9th may be the most conducive date for the board members. Beth would like to do her budget hearing 15 minutes before the meeting, so we could do 6:45 and a 7 meeting. We could do it all earlier, we could do it all later, whatever works. It's what works best for the five of us, what we want to do there. So I'm okay with a 6:45 budget hearing and a 7 meeting. Is that pretty consistent? 7 p.m. Meeting, and that'll be a relatively lengthy agenda with a lot of things to approve.
And only 5 policies, right?
Yeah.
Only
5 policies.
And then at this point, we elect President Pro Tem to run the January meeting, and then we'll elect officers from here. So do I have
I nominate Jesse Truitt to be the President Pro Tem.
Beth, you call the roll.
Mr. Bodie?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Aye.
And then can we approve the January 19th meeting, organizational meeting data for January 9th? 6:45 budget hearing, 7 p.m. meeting.
So moved.
Second. Beth, please call the roll.
Mr. Bodie?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Aye.
One of the important functions of that organizational meeting will be to set the regular board meetings for the year. You know, we've typically done about one a month. I think we're required by law to use 6. Putting that out there annually. There are lots of boards that do 2 a month. So, but we'll want to make sure to have our calendars as best we can. I know we're busy. We can't always predict the year, but, you know, to try. I mean, it's really to get the 5 of us there as much as possible. Any other items from discussion from the board? Motion for adjournment.
Mr. Bodie?
Aye.
Mrs. Brannon?
Aye.
Mrs. Palmisano?
Aye.
Mr. Truitt?
Aye.
Ms. Wasmuth?
Aye.
Thank you. Thanks for those.